Next case is Sullivan v. McDonough, number 21-1459. Mr. Carpenter, you have reserved 5 minutes of your time for rebuttal, correct?
Excuse me, Your Honor. Yes, that's correct.
Okay. We're ready to start when you are.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Kenneth Carpenter appearing on behalf of Mr. Daniel Williams. Mr. Daniel Williams is deceased, and the current case caption is with a substituted appellant, as noted by the Court. Mr. Williams' case is about his entitlement to de novo review by the Veterans Court of a question of law as to whether or not the Board, under the applicable legal standard to rebut the second prong of the presumption of sound condition under 38 U.S.C. 1111.
But what is the question of law that
the sufficiency?
Because I'm going to tell you, it seems to me that your appeal is asking us to review this, to review the factual findings of held below.
I disagree, Your Honor, obviously, but I believe that the reason that it appears that way is because of the use of the wrong legal standard. Let me back up to your original question. The question of law is, did the Board meet its evidentiary burden to rebut both prongs of the presumption of soundness? This Court's case in Wagner.
That's a legal question?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. It is a sufficiency of the evidence to meet that legal standard. And that has been the law of the Veterans Court.
To answer that question, what do we have to do? Reweigh the evidence?
No, Your Honor. You have to determine whether or not the Veterans Court applied the legal standard for 1111 or the Veterans Court, as asserted by Mr. Williams, applied the legal standard for 1153. And those are two different legal standards.
I have to be honest, I was having trouble deciphering your briefing. Can you just tell me what was the legal standard that the Veterans Court used that you believe to be the incorrect standard? Can you pinpoint the standard that they articulated that you are saying, aha, that's the wrong standard?
Yes, Your Honor. At page 7 of the decision, at Appendix 7, the paragraph that begins, the increase in disability refers to the overall worsening of the disability, and the rest of that paragraph cites two additional cases beyond this Court's decision in Davis. All of those citations, and that was the criteria used by the Veterans Court to review the sufficiency of the evidence, was the legal standard for 1153. 1153 occurs when there has been a pre-existing condition.
I understand what the terms of the debate are. So it's this paragraph that you're taking issue with.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and nothing else in this makes up this appeal.
Everything that flows from that, which is the analysis made by the Veterans Court through that lens, and the repeated references to what the veteran or the appellant did not show. In the case of the legal standard for the presumption of sound condition, the evidentiary burden is on the veteran, on the VA. It is not on the veteran. In 1153, the initial evidentiary burden is on the veteran. That's what distinguishes between those two
provisions. That the burden is on the veteran in Section 1153?
You know that by the cases that were referred to coming from this Court's decision in Davis and citing the decisions of the Veterans Court in Hunt and Ward. Those are 1153 cases in which the condition was noted at entrance to service.
Did the Board or the Veterans Court here put the burden on the claimant as opposed to put the burden on the VA?
In their analysis of whether or not the evidentiary burden had been met or the legal sufficiency of the evidence, yes, they did, Your Honor.
They put the burden on your client.
And they put the burden on my
client.
Where
do we see that?
You see that in the language that follows this paragraph, in which the Court discusses the reference made by the Court was to undermine the examiner's decision. let's try to put this in context. This case came about because a remand by the board that sent it back for a very specific VA medical opinion. Because that because the record at that time did not include sufficient evidence to rebut the second prong of the presumption of soundness. That medical opinion in 2019, which is relied upon by the Veterans Court for its analysis, had to have met the legal standard of clear and unmistakable evidence to rebut the presumption that Mr. Williams' condition was not aggravated.
Is the meaning of aggravated or aggravation the same in 1153 and 1111?
No.
How does it differ?
It is different as recited in this court's decision in Wagner, because in 1111, the Congress put the entire burden on the Secretary to rebut two prongs of that presumption in order for the presumption to fail. The second prong is not addressed until the first prong is rebutted by clear and unmistakable evidence. And that clear and unmistakable evidence must be that there is an existence of a pre-existing condition. That first prong was rebutted, and we do not contest that. We contest whether the second prong was rebutted. And that second prong carries the co-equal high evidentiary burden of clear and unmistakable evidence.
And how is it different in 1153?
In 1153, you start with the pre-existing condition having been noted at entrance. That is the trigger for 1153.
Right. Because but when it comes to aggravation, isn't it the very same test for aggravation?
With respect, no, Your Honor, it is not. Because the difference is the Congress placed a burden on the veteran to come forward with evidence to get the benefit of the presumption of aggravation. That is substantively different from 1111.
Where did that happen here?
That happened here because nothing was noted at entrance. And
no, but I'm saying in terms of what the Veterans Court did, what the VA did, how can we see in this record that the VA improperly did a burden shift to put the burden on the claimant to establish that there was no aggravation or that there was aggravation?
Well, to be clear, Your Honor, we're not suggesting that this was an error by the VA or an error by the board. We're suggesting
that
the board...
But then show me where in the Veterans Court decision can I see that the Veterans Court erroneously put the burden on the claimant.
By not making the analysis required by the evidentiary standard under the second prong of 1111. They put the burden on Mr. Williams.
They looked at the medical evaluation board when the claimant separated from service, and then also looked at the more recent medical evaluation of 2019, and both of those concluded that there was no aggravation during service, and so then ultimately concluded that the VA had met its burden.
The Veterans Court mischaracterized the evidence in the VA examination that was remanded for and obtained in 2019. The opinion
something we can review?
You can review what it says, which is not consistent with the evidentiary burden that must be made. That is the purpose of a de novo review of meeting the legal sufficiency to rebut the evidentiary presumption of sound condition by clear and unmistakable evidence. And at Appendix 42, that medical opinion simply states that it was the examiner's opinion that the veteran's active phase of symptoms precipitating his hospitalization constituted an intermittent flare-up. Intermittent flare-up is the evidentiary burden under 1153. That is the requirement by Congress of 1153 that the veteran comes forward with evidence to trigger the presumption of aggravation. That is a different statutory scheme than 1111. The burden under 1111 is never on the veteran unless and until both prongs of the presumption have been rebutted. And they were not rebutted in this case by the legally required evidence, and the entire analysis made from page 7 to the end of the opinion of the Veterans Court did not address whether clear and unmistakable evidence was presented by that medical opinion, which it could not be because it doesn't address the critical question. There's only one question, and that is, was the condition not aggravated? And as this court said in Wagner, there are two ways in which the government can show that a condition was not aggravated. That's an affirmative negative showing that must be made by clear and unmistakable evidence. And that evidentiary burden was not met by the board, and Mr. Williams had a right to have a de novo review of that question of law. Was there legally sufficient evidence to rebut that presumption? And as this court said in Wagner, the way to do that, the secretary can establish that by showing by clear and unmistakable evidence either that there was no increase, which is not what was said in the 2019 opinion, or that any increase was the natural progression. That's the clear and unmistakable evidence that was required to have been in this record and was not. Okay. I'll reserve the balance of my time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Carver. Mr. Weiser, did I pronounce your name correctly?
Whizzer, Your Honor.
Whizzer. Okay. You may proceed.
May it please the Court. I think the best place to start is simply the text of the Wagner decision itself, and I'm going to refer the Court to page 1096 of the opinion, where Wagner, as we understand it, it's best to disentangle how these two standards, 1111 and 1153, relate to each other. And Wagner explained under Roman numeral 5 that you can have a presumption of soundness under section 1111. It has the two prongs, as Mr. Williams contended, that you have to show no pre-existing condition as well as no aggravation. Both of those have to be demonstrated by clear and convincing evidence. But the court made clear that in order to show a lack of aggravation, the VA must demonstrate there was no increase in disability during service or that any increase in disability was due to the natural progress of the pre-existing condition. And the court expressly referenced 1153 as the source of that definition. So this court in Wagner instructed VA and the Veterans Court that when conducting the presumption of soundness analysis under 1111, once you reach the second prong and you're trying to determine has a condition been aggravated or not, the same definition under 1153 applies. Now, we don't dispute that 1153 contains two elements. It contains both the definition of aggravation as well as the standard that must be met if there is a claim for aggravation standing alone. So as Mr. Williams contended, if the schizophrenia had been noted on his entrance paperwork, but there was some claim that it was aggravated during service, he would have to make that prima facie showing that the condition increased in severity or disability over the course of his service. And that is laid out in 1153. But 1153 also just lays out the definition of aggravation. And that definition, as this court in Wagner instructed, applies to the analysis under 1111. So if we turn back then to the Veterans Court decision here, and Appendix 7, which was being discussed previously, yes, the Veterans Court was citing two cases that were defining what aggravation means. Yes, some of those cases arose within the context of a claim for aggravation as distinct from a claim addressing the presumption of soundness. But it's clear in the text here, the Veterans Court is not shifting the burden or saying that the veteran has any obligation to make a prima facie showing. What the Veterans Court is doing is just what this court in Wagner instructed, looking to 1153 and how this court and the Veterans Court precedents have construed the definition of aggravation under 1153, and applying that definition when conducting the second prong of the analysis. And I would point out that two paragraphs later, after summarizing both the examiner's opinion as well as the contemporary evidence that demonstrated a lack of aggravation, the Veterans Court summarized its holding, and this is the second to last sentence in the, I suppose, the last full paragraph, if you don't count the one-line paragraph. It says that the consistency, referring to the contemporary medical evidence, with the other medical opinions strengthens the court's overall conclusion. Clear and unmistakable evidence exists to show that the veteran's disability was both pre-existing and not aggravated by service. So it's not merely, as Mr. Williams' brief concedes that the court articulated the correct standard a couple pages earlier. We can see that in conducting the analysis itself, the court made clear that it understood the burden that had to be met, and it made a factual finding that the evidence met that burden, that there was clear and unmistakable evidence to show that Mr. Williams' condition was not aggravated during his service. The only last point I would make is in reference to the medical opinion itself, there appeared to be some quibble about the exact wording that was used in the medical opinion, but I would simply remind that the medical opinion itself is not a legal conclusion. It's simply factual evidence. There's nothing that says that the medical opinion itself has to use the same sort of legal deterministic language the court would use when applying the facts to the relevant legal standard. So the fact that the medical opinion itself did not say clear and unmistakable evidence doesn't demonstrate one thing or another. The medical opinion showed that whatever symptoms Mr. Williams experienced during his service, in the opinion of the medical examiner, was nothing else than just intermittent flare-ups, did not in any way demonstrate the kind of permanent worsening of a disability that's required under 1111, incorporating the definition of 1153.
Mr. Carpenter says we're confronted with the question of law as to whether there was legally sufficient evidence here. Is that a question that's presented to us, and can we reach it if it is?
We don't believe that that's presented appropriately in this case, Your Honor. We acknowledge there may be some very limited circumstances where, the same way a judge might determine that there is simply no evidence in a record that a jury could make a finding on, the court can take notice of a total lack of evidence on a relevant point on appeal here, but that's simply not the case. We have the 2019 medical examination. We have the evidence that's cited from the contemporary medical records, all of which at least were available to the fact finder to demonstrate that Mr. Williams' condition was not aggravated during his service. So this would not be the kind of case where that principle could even apply, because there is obviously relevant evidence in the record to address the aggravation prong. The only question, as I think some of Your Honor's questions alluded to at the beginning of this argument, is were they sufficient? Did they meet the threshold of clear and unmistakable evidence? That's something that's within the purview of VA and the Veterans Court and not reviewable here by this court.
And was that the basis for, I think you made an alternative argument in your brief, that perhaps we should dismiss this appeal?
Yes, Your Honor. And again, referring to some of Your Honor's questions at the beginning, it's difficult to comprehend exactly what the argument here is, if not an argument that the evidence simply did not rise to the threshold of clear and unmistakable. That would be an issue that is outside the scope of this court's jurisdiction, and so a dismissal on that ground would be appropriate. Unless there are any other questions, then...
No, but thank you.
We ask the court affirm. Thank you.
To be clear, the legal sufficiency of the evidence is not before this court. It was before the Veterans Court. This court's jurisdiction is limited by statute to interpretations of statutes and regulations. The relevant statute here is 1111. It is not 1153. The Veterans Court cannot lawfully introduce the legal standard of 1153 as a basis to affirm the question of law as to whether or not the board had the legally sufficient, clear, and unmistakable evidence to rebut the second prong. They did not. There is a difference at law between what is presented in 1153. It is not merely definitional. It is a separate, freestanding statutory presumption that affords a veteran who has a pre-existing condition noted at the entrance to service that requires the veteran to come forward and show that there was not just a flare-up, that there was, in fact, a substantial worsening of the condition while on active duty. That is the veteran's burden, which is produced by statute when there was not a recognition, where there was a recognition of a pre-existing condition. This record is undebatable. This is an 1111 case because this man's schizophrenia was somehow not noted at entrance to service. He was permitted into service. There is clear evidence in the record of the worsening of his condition, which is not his burden to show, but the burden that the Veterans Court placed on him by relying upon the legal standard of 1153 rather than the legal standard of 1111, which requires a formidable burden of clear and unmistakable evidence to show that the condition was not aggravated. The government stands before this court and says, but it doesn't have to rely upon the magic words in the medical opinion. Well, of course not. But it has to rely upon clear and unmistakable evidence. Where is it? The only job that the Veterans Court had in this case was to examine whether or not the record before the board included clear and unmistakable evidence. It did not. Therefore, the presumption was not rebutted, and that decision of the board should have been, as a matter of law, reversed using the correct legal standard as interpreted by this court in Wagner of 1111. Unless there's further questions from the panel.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson.
Thank you very much
for your argument. We thank the parties for their argument.